In 2018, Blindspotting was one of the buzziest movies to come out of the Sundance Film Festival. The comedy drama stars David Diggs as Colin, a convicted felon who witnesses a police shooting with only 3 days left on his parole, and Rafael Casal as Miles, Colin's childhood best friend who's never far from trouble. Now Blindspotting has been spun off into a series on Stars, offering a fresh and more expansive take on the movie's themes around incarceration and race. Colin is gone, but Miles returns, as does Miles' girlfriend, Ashley, played by Jasmine Cephas-Jones, who has become the story's central focus. And there's a colorful cast of new characters and musical set pieces to boot. I'm Aisha Harris, and today we're talking about Blindspotting on Pop Culture Happy Hour from NPR. So don't go away.
This message comes from NPR sponsor Capital One. With no fees or minimums on checking and savings accounts, banking with Capital One is the easiest decision. Kind of like Taylor Swift choosing a cardigan on a chilly day. And with their top-rated app, you can deposit checks and transfer money anytime, anywhere, making Capital One an even easier decision. That's banking reimagined. What's in your wallet? Terms apply. Capital One N.A., member FDIC.
Welcome back. Joining us is Odie Henderson, who is a film critic for RogerEbert.com. Great to have you back, Odie.
Thanks for having me.
Also with us is JC Howard. He is a producer of NPR's TED Radio Hour and How I Built This. Also great to have you back, JC.
Hello. Thanks for having me.
Yeah. I know you are an Oakland native, so I'm excited to talk with you about this.
Oh, I have many thoughts on the Oakland piece of this.
Awesome. Well, Blindspotting's first season premiered on Stars last month and stars Jasmine Cephas-Jones and Rafael Casal as Ashley and Miles, an Oakland couple raising their young son, Sean, played by Atticus Woodward. Miles is arrested for a drug possession, and he's ultimately convicted and sentenced to a 5-year prison term. The show zeroes in on what it means to have a loved one locked up as Ashley struggles with telling Sean why his dad is gone. The ensemble is rounded out by several characters new to the Blindspotting universe, including Miles' sister Trish and mom Rainey, played by Jalen Barron and Helen Hunt. Yes, that Helen Hunt. Ashley's friend Janelle, played by Candace Nicholas Lippman, and a recent parolee on house arrest named Earl, played by Benjamin Earl Turner. Blindspotting the show is set in 2018, picking up a few months after the events of the original movie. But while there are callbacks here and there, viewers don't have to worry about having seen the movie before digging into this show. The biggest difference is that David Diggs' character, Colin, does not appear in the series, though Diggs serves as a co-creator and executive producer alongside Casal, and he co-wrote a few of the episodes. The show borrows from its source in other ways, most notably its deeply rooted love for Oakland and Bay Area culture. Both Diggs and Casal are natives. And like the film, the series incorporates music, poetry, and magical realism. So, Odie, I know you were a huge fan of the original film, the 2018 movie. It was, I think, your top movie of that year or one of the top movies of that year.
It was my top movie of the year and my top movie of the decade.
Okay, so I'm so glad we have you here to talk about this. Can you talk about why you loved the movie and how you think the show compares to the movie?
Well, it's interesting because, forgive me, my voice is going from karaoke too much. In 2018, there were three movies from Oakland. There was Sorry to Bother You, there was Black Panther, and there was this movie. And there were three different ways of showing Black people doing things that they don't normally do in movies. There's a lot of magical realism in the movie, and it comes onto the TV show as well. And I just fell for it. I just love the way it was paced. I think the movie's darker than the TV show, but all the things where people go in their little flights of fancy and have little rap moments, or there's dancing, or people are going into their own minds. It's fascinating to just watch Black people do this. I really got on that vibe. The show kind of brings it down a little bit and has a lot of that stuff in the background more. But it's more present, I think, on the show. And it's also presented a little more lightly.
Yeah. And when you say it's more present, do you mean the magical realism or sort of the themes in terms of just race and incarceration?
Well, I think the movie's a lot more haunted. Mm. David Diggs' character sees someone shot, and that haunts him throughout the entire movie. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Whereas this show was haunted, but by a slightly less violent thing. And the show was haunted by fathers in prison and mothers who have to deal with that and families who have to deal with that. So the show is haunted too, but I think it's a little lighter than having to carry the death of somebody on your conscience. You know, having seen that.
Yeah.
That's what I mean about being lighter.
Right. Yeah. It reminds me a little bit, or actually a lot, of Ava DuVernay's movie Middle of Nowhere, which is also a film about what it means to be the person left behind, the person who has a loved one in prison. It's not something we usually see. Often we're seeing what it's like to be behind bars, and I think obviously that is a very valid and very important experience to witness. But I also think that what I appreciate about this show is the way in which it's really about what it means to mourn someone who's not dead, but who is lost to the system. JC.
Yes.
Oakland native.
Yes.
And also, I should say that I now live in Oakland. Actually, it's almost been a year now. As of like 10 months ago, they filmed this show very close to where I live. So I saw it happening. I didn't actually see any stars, but I was able to see the streets blocked off. So it was very familiar to me. But JC, you are a native. So how do you feel about the way this show puts on for Oakland? Because it really...
It puts on.
Yeah.
Well, first of all, let me say congratulations on your upgrade and moving into Oakland. It's like, it's amazing. It's a good city. And listen, let me first put it out there that if you have ever spoken to me for more than 10 minutes, I probably mentioned at least 3 times that I was born and raised in Oakland. It has come up 3 times already on this show that I was born and raised in Oakland. I basically lived there my entire life. And I grew up watching movies like Friday and Home Alone Lost in New York, and I had Spike Lee movies and Woody Allen movies around. So I got to see these rich movies set in these vibrant cities like New York and LA. But almost every time there'd be a movie or a TV show set in my region, it would be in San Francisco. Mm. And San Francisco is fine, don't get me wrong, but San Francisco is no Oakland. We did have Hanging with Mr. Cooper, and we had like a mention on The Simpsons, but not a lot of high-profile shows and movies in Oakland. Man, is Blindspotting set in Oakland. I mean, aggressively set in Oakland. I know we'll probably talk more about this, but as an Oakland kid at heart, it's really just nice to see my city on a screen. And I fully realize that there can't be movies and shows in every city, right? But coming from a place as culture-rich and sometimes troubled as Oakland, it provides a complex and, as Blindspotting shows, a beautiful backdrop for storytelling. So my first thought is that I kind of honestly wonder how people who don't have that same connection to Oakland, how those people see the movie. But I also feel like if I could identify with Friday and I can identify with other shows set in the hood and other movies set in the hood, then other people can identify pretty well with Blindspotting. Now, as for the content of the show, I think it stands really well on its own. If I have one gripe about it, the problem that I have with the way Oakland is often portrayed in media is it is shown as kind of crime-ridden and violent. And while Blindspotting does not fall into that, it does, as has been mentioned already, it focuses a lot on the carceral system, right? And to be sure, many people from Oakland may well know someone who has gone to jail or had a run-in with the police. But the show seems to revolve around prison in ways I don't think it needs to, particularly with the men, from Colin to Miles to Earl, and even Sean's relationship to prison. And while all of that is real, my concern, frankly, as an Oaklander, is that many people from outside of Oakland may come away with this weird impression of life in Oakland as kind of centering around and focusing on people in prison.
Yeah. I mean, I can totally see that concern, especially considering, as you said, there are so few movies and shows set in Oakland.
Exactly.
I've had my own issues with at least the first few episodes of the show and somewhat with the movie. My biggest gripe, I think, is the fact that, like, just for me, spoken word slam poetry is just not my thing. And I've had to come to accept this. It doesn't do anything for me when I hear it. My eyes roll in the back of my head. Like, I've tried. I've gone to shows at the New Rican Cafe in New York and all that. Like, I can't. And this show is very, very heavy on that.
Yeah.
And I think for me, part of the issue with that kind of expression of art and language, it's just, I feel like there's a pattern that is so easy to slip into speaking. And it, to me, disconnects from what the person is actually saying. Like, I'd love to play a little clip of Jasmine Cephas Jones's character, Ashley. In this scene, she's kind of reeling from Miles having just gone to prison and like what she's going to do now that he is gone. And there's just something about the pattern that even someone as talented and amazing of an actress and performer as she is, it just doesn't work for me. And yeah, let's just play a little clip of that.
Let me breathe. A lockbox Orion he. A 12-year clock goddess, we bonded deep. We crisscrossed ourselves a doctrine till it was our policy. We built a church of truth with rough tongues and hid the gun from company. We just built ourselves a temple from the ruins we grew up in, and now the rug's pulled free.
I appreciate the visual aspects of it when it gets super theatrical. There are often moments of just music and dancing. They have this amazing ensemble of dancers who often represent men who are in prison. They are wearing sort of the prison jumpsuits, and they kind of float around and dance around the characters in certain scenes. But those moments just don't work for me. What I do appreciate about this sort of magical realism moments is the way in which they use Miles. In the movie, Miles was very much a hothead, total just like unaware of his whiteness, and sort of was the type of character who felt like he got a pass because he grew up, quote unquote, in the hood and around other Black people and got a pass for all of these things.
Yeah.
And here he's a lot more toned down. And he, even though he is in prison, he does show up in interesting ways where he is kind of a ghost who's haunting her. They have conversations back and forth. And I love those moments between them because I think it really solidifies their connection, even though they are apart during this. It builds that connection that we haven't seen because they've been together for 12 years and we're being dropped into this story. But I think by the fourth and the fifth episode, it really starts to hit its groove and the characters really start to find their way.
Right. I think it's Shakespearean. I think the ghost of Miles and the rap things are like soliloquies.
Right.
And I think they get dropped in and it's very, very Shakespearean. So I really appreciate that. I used to do slam poetry, so I know not to invite you to any of my own.
Sorry, Odie. I'll be there for karaoke, but not your slam poetry.
You know, it's funny because I might say that this amounts to, in some ways, a half-hour sitcom, right? Like, the format, the humor, the space between laughs. But Aisha, as you say, it's also, like, wholly different because it has these moments of heart and emotional clarity that are highlighted by the use of verse and spoken word and modern dance. And I feel like those things sort of work together to underscore deeper moments and almost take the audience by the hand and invite them to kind of come along and feel something, which it sounds like to you does not work as well, but it is different. And I hope this comparison is somewhat elucidating, but it's like if a Tyler Perry show actually reflected modern Black culture.
Mm.
Like if House of Pain or one of those shows actually took place in the realm of contemporary Blackness, instead of leaning on tropes and jokes about taking off your belt every time a kid misbehaves. And I kind of agree with you. Like, I don't love all of spoken word. It's kind of hit or miss. But I really appreciated those modern elements. And included in those modern elements is some of the way that the scenes are shot. Like, Helen Hunt's first scene, where she's having this discussion with Trish, played by Jalen Barron, it's shot in a way that kind of feels like dancing and almost serves as a visual reflection of their conversation. And it's just so pretty to watch that I kind of got lost in that moment. So I do really kind of appreciate those modern elements.
I love that you described it as Tyler Perry, if Tyler Perry had any sort of real feeling to his work. I think that's such an apt description. And I do want to say, like, even though it's not my bag, I do appreciate that they are swinging for it and going for it because it does feel like a very different show. And it feels even very different from the movie. You know, the movie had those elements, and especially like one of the final scenes of the movie, there is that moment that we're all waiting for where David Diggs gets his sort of big in a musical, when you can no longer speak, you sing, and when you can no longer sing or dance. And here he's like, can no longer speak, so I'm going to rap. And I think it's really, really powerful. Yeah. And there are moments, I think, where it really works here. One of my favorite characters, though, who I want to talk about is just the character of Earl, who his background is that he is a tenant of Janelle and her mother, and he is just out of prison for a weed charge. And of course, weed now is legal in California. And so it kind of touches on the irony of that. And he has to wear, in a sort of humorous way, but also a really depressing way, he has to wear an ankle monitor that has to be hooked up by like an extension cord. So he is chained to this house basically with an extension cord, and he brings it everywhere he goes. And there's a scene, he has a plotline in episode 5 where he basically is trying to get a job, and it really digs into the issues that come from being a felon and trying to get a job and him having to be back home in time for his curfew and all of those things. While he's trying to do good, the system is keeping him back. And there are some musical elements in that episode that I think just like really hit the spot and I think are really beautifully shot and beautifully executed. And he's just a really sympathetic character who is funny and smart. I just think he, to me, is the standout in this show, and I hope people check in, if only for that. And he's also an Oakland native as well, so.
Right, yeah. And he wrote episode 7, which is a lot of fun.
Yes.
But it's funny, he's got a big orange extension cord, which I appreciated because that was so super hood. The big orange extension cord. He starts out as being kind of, you think he might be the buffoon of the show.
Yeah.
Because a lot of jokes are made early on at his expense, you know. And then it turns out that he's quite intelligent and everything. And it's just fascinating to watch this character kind of develop. Out of all of the characters on the show, I think he has the most interesting arc in terms of unexpected character development.
Yeah, I
think that's right. I mean, Jasmine Cephas Jones, she carries herself in a way that you would never think of her as Aunt Peggy from Hamilton. Like, she's not that like side character anymore. She really steps into the leading role as Ashley. But two things really surprised me about the show and about the performances. And one of them is the thing that we're all kind of gathering around as like gathering around the flame. And that is Benjamin Earl Turner's performance as Earl. Like, it surprised me how much I loved him by the end. By the end, I am really invested in Earl. The other thing that really surprised me about the show is how well Helen Hunt kind of fit into this world. Mm-hmm. This is not Mad About You, but she is almost this typical progressive Berkeley mom whose kids hung out with mostly or only people of color. She's extremely permissive, unfazed, and pretty much didn't miss a beat. That said, of course, her character, in my opinion, like as an Oakland native, has some minor inconsistencies, but not so much that I find it bothersome. I think she really fits into this world.
Yeah. She is the sort of hippie mom that I feel, like you said, in some ways she could be a caricature, but I think she does play it in a way. And there are layers to that performance that I think are working against her becoming a caricature, which it could have so easily been. And she even said in like one interview about the show that she was like, I will do this, but I don't want to be wearing a bad wig that'll make me look like this is just a joke. Like, make sure that I like fit into this world. And I think they did a really good job of doing that. Before we go, we haven't even talked about Trish, played by Jaylen Barron, really, because her character arc is also very interesting to me. Yeah. She's working at a strip club, but she's also trying to get her own business off the ground. She kind of toes this line between being a feminist, but she's super young and doesn't quite understand like what that might entail. But she's very gung-ho and determined, and she doesn't understand how sometimes the way she talks or the way she can't or cannot code switch can affect the way in which she goes about doing her business. And I think by, you know, if you keep watching the show, she's also someone who starts off like she could be a buffoon in a way, and elements of what we all thought Cardi B was when she first came out. It was like, you talk like this and you are probably really dumb. That is the stereotype that we have with people who typically look like and talk like her. Yeah. But she actually has really specific aspirations and is trying to do things her own way and really just get ahead while not compromising who she is. And I really appreciate that arc. And I think she's doing some really interesting work there.
I think Ashley and Trish, they're kind of two sides of the same coin.
Absolutely.
Mm-hmm. Ashley looks at Trish and says she's too ratchet.
Mm-hmm.
And Trish looks at Ashley and says she's too bougie.
That's right.
Yep.
But in actuality, they both have both of those elements.
Yeah.
And I think they're looking at each other and seeing the one thing about themselves they don't like.
Yeah.
And that's why there's so much tension between them.
Yeah. No, you know, I think along these exact lines, the show kind of seems to continue in the path that was laid by the movie in kind of wrestling with the blind spots, right? Like that's why it's called that, blind spotting. It's the blind spots of the characters And this idea that while one thing is seen by some, there's an entire other picture of a person to be seen. Like, there's this entire conversation on race in episode 6 that resembles a real ongoing conversation among Black folks about Blackness and acceptance and colorism within the Black community. And I feel like...
And they're playing dominoes.
Yes, they're playing dominoes while all this is happening and talking about Meteor Man. Like, this is something that I feel is rarely captured in all of its thoughtfulness and criticism and humor. And I thought that was beautiful as well. And most of these characters have... They seem to have this quality about only being half seen by the other characters in the show. As has been said before, Ashley and Trish and Earl even, and Sean, they all had to shake these perceptions or at least embrace all the sides of themselves and all the sides of their counterparts, of the other people on the screen. And I would say that the point of the show in many ways seems to be that, listen, people can be more than one thing. They may or may not be the thing that you see them as, but they are more than just that one thing.
Yeah, that's such a great point. And we want to know what you all think about Blindspotting. You can find us at facebook.com/PCHH and on Twitter at PCHH. And that brings us to the end of our show. Thank you so much to both of you for being here.
Thank you.
Thank you.
And of course, thank you for listening to Pop Culture Happy Hour from NPR. We will see you tomorrow when we'll be talking about Space Jam, A New Legacy.
Investigations into police use of force and misconduct were secret in California until now. We've sifted through hours of interrogation tape to find out who does the system of police accountability really serve and who does it protect. Listen now to every episode of the new podcast On Our Watch from NPR and KQED.